So good afternoon, Audrey.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for agreeing to be interviewed.
It's my pleasure.
So I'm first going to ask you some simple demographic questions. And these questions may jog your memories, but please keep your answers brief and to the point for now. We can go into more detail later in the interview. Please say and spell your name.
My name is Audrey Marguerite Sleet Lucas, and that's A-U-D-R-E-Y. My last name is L-U-C-A-S.
What is your date of birth, including the year?
I was born August 24th, 1934.
How would you describe your ethnic background?
I'm African American.
What is your religion, if any?
I am Baptist and have been Baptist all my life.
What is the highest level of formal education you have completed?
I graduated from the Ann Arbor Public School System, worked to help my brother go to college, but I did graduate from Clary College.
What is your marital status?
I am single at this time. I was married and divorced, and my former husband has since deceased.
How many children do you have?
I have 2 children.
What was your primary occupation?
I worked at the University of Michigan Health System for 47 years, and I worked in several capacities, but the last 35 years of my employment there, I was what they called a human resource consultant.
Okay. We'll come back to more about that shortly.
All right.
If you are retired, what age did you retire?
I was 66 when I retired.
Now we're going to go on to memories of childhood and youth. This part of the interview is about your childhood and youth. Even if these questions once again jog memories about other times in your life, please only respond with memories for this part of your life. What was your family like when you were a child?
Well, I am so blessed. I came from a very wonderful, loving family. I was born in Connersville, Indiana, and there was my brother that's next to me. He's 18 months younger than I. And we grew up in Connersville until we moved here to Ann Arbor in September of 1941.
You've been here a long time.
Yes, yes.
What sort of work did your parents do?
My mother worked, she did day work when she first came, and then she worked in the sorority houses. She worked at a sorority house on Hill Street for a number of years. And she did work, she worked parties, she worked at the stadium, you know, that kind of thing is what she did as keeping, you know, bread on the table. And my dad, when he came here, he worked at the bomber plant in Willow Run.
Okay, in terms of your mother at the sorority houses, was that also preparing meals for those that lived there?
She was the housekeeper.
The housekeeper.
Yes, yes.
What are some of your earliest memories during childhood and youth?
Just very loving. I was blessed to come from a very loving family, and we just enjoyed each other. I don't ever remember for a long time living alone, because when we were in Connersville, my aunt and my 2 cousins lived with us. And then when we came up here to live, when we rented a house, my uncle and his wife and their 2 children came to live with us. And we seemed to be the catalyst for family coming this way from Indiana. So there was always somebody living with us at some point or another, which I, now that I think about it, I really love, because it was always nice to have a lot of people around.
I think that probably is something that happened in a lot of African-American families, mm-hmm. in terms of when people move to an area, mm-hmm. they moved in with
yes.
family members
yes.
for that support. Were there any special days, events, or family traditions you remember from your childhood?
Not really. We celebrated normal holidays. We always got together at Christmas time, Thanksgiving, enjoyed the summers for the 4th of July and holidays, Labor Day. as I think about those holidays. One of the nice things that I remember, not necessarily as a tradition, but my mother never liked to see people go hungry. And so if anybody, as a child, I remember if anybody knocked on the door, because we didn't live that far from the railroad station, and they were hungry, she fed them. That was just how she was raised. And if we had something, we shared it. And so that's one of the traditions I remember. When we lived across the street and growing up, there were students going to the University of Michigan, and they came to our house for breakfast. And on Fridays, we had waffled suppers and that kind of thing, because they didn't have family here. And so we sort of became their family. And so it was always a blessing to have a lot of people around, even though I had to wash all the dishes after it was over.
That's wonderful, though, that your mother was that way about mm-hmm, sharing. Mm-hmm. That's great. Which holidays did your family celebrate? Which are the main holidays?
Just the ones, yes, the Christmas and Thanksgiving. And, of course, because we were church people, we were always up for sunrise service, for Easter service, and celebrated Palm Sundays when they had the church services and the 3 hours. So those were very important to our family, and so we always participated in those.
So mentioning church services, you said you've always been Baptist. So when you arrived here, did your family join Second Baptist?
Yes, immediately.
Oh my goodness, you have. Long, long time.
Yes, yes, so. Yes. Well, my mother had lived here before.
Okay.
With her sister. And so consequently, when we moved back here as a family, she was already sort of connected to Reverend Carpenter and the Second Baptist Church.
All right. So the original location for Second Baptist, what street was that?
That was on the corner of Fifth Avenue and Beeks.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's probably some pictures and things around that be used.
Yes, yes, because okay. We were part of the old church.
All right.
I mean, I go that far back when we were in the original church and the basement kind of was falling down. We had to go and replace the basement, and we stayed there until we had to build another church in 1952. It opened up. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Has your family created any of its own traditions and celebrations?
I would say no. Just the things that I talked about, as far as the waffled suppers with the students, and just being available to enjoy one another whenever there were people around or whenever there was a need. My mother did readings. She was a wonderful poetry reader. And so as a child, I accompanied her to a lot of places because of her beautiful skill of doing readings. And so that was always a very wonderful experience to be a part of.
It sounds like it. So when she did readings, was it at other churches? Was it organizations? Exactly where did she do her readings?
She did them for clubs. She did them at church. She did them for special events, special holiday events, because she just really did it so well. She was always being asked to come forward and to perform.
What was the highest grade you completed? You mentioned something earlier about Clary, so you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I graduated from high school, and I had intended to go to school, to college, but my brother, who was just 18 months younger than myself, he was a very, very bright young man, and so I decided that I would go to work and help him go to school, and then maybe go to school later on. And that's why I ended up going part-time to Cleary. I went nights because I worked during the day. So I took night classes and finally did get a degree from Cleary. And so I didn't do any other kind of postgraduate work after that.
So you said you graduated from high school. Did you attend high school and middle school and elementary, or high school and middle school here in Ann Arbor?
All of it except the first grade.
All right, so tell me what schools.
I went to Jones School. And then, of course, at that time, Jones School went through the ninth grade. And then we went to Ann Arbor High School, 10 through 12.
All right.
Yes, and of course, Jones School was primarily a black school because African-American attendance, because that's where the neighborhood was. That's where they allowed us to live, Fifth Avenue, Fourth Avenue, Beek Street. And so consequently, we went to Jones School and we walked. Fortunately for me, I only lived always just a few blocks away from the school when I went to Jones School, so it was very easy for me to go to school because I didn't have a long distance to go to from. And we came through the time where, you know, it was segregation because, you know, we were only allowed to live certain places. But as a young person, I never felt like I was being discriminated against. I guess I just, you know, sometimes you just don't know.
That's not what you
don't know. That's what you know. Mm-hmm. And we lived in a neighborhood with Greeks and Mexicans. And that was just who our friends were. I remember when I went to Jones School, the teacher said, "Oh, we have a new girl in class, and Fran, I'm giving her to you." She was a Greek girl that lived down the street from where I lived, and she and I were friends forever.
That's great.
And I'd always tell her, "You have to take care of me, remember? I was given to you to take care of." So.
So in terms of teachers at that school, were they African Americans or?
No.
Okay.
No, we had no African American teachers.
But it was predominantly minorities at that school?
At that time, yes. Okay. And you know, as I said, that was just the way of life. And that's what we experienced and didn't think anything about it because, you know, you sort of felt like this is the way life is at this point in time, and you just accepted it.
Sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
That's exactly mm-hmm. right. Okay. I will say that the teachers were always very nice. The only thing I think some of them did not really encourage you to work to your fullest benefit, to really stretch and think about college courses or things that were going to help you after you got out of school. So I think that's one of the things that I regret, even though we lived in a university town. It was like they had expectations that you would probably go and work in a kitchen someplace or mop floors or do that janitorial kind of work as opposed to having you stretch your imagination to really feel that you could do other things.
You know, even now, as a former educator, that conversation will come up about not having those high expectations mm-hmm. for African-American students. So mm-hmm. that continues to be a concern.
Yes.
What about your school experience is different from school as you know it today?
Oh, it's really different. You know, we had our swimming classes at the YMCA, even though sometimes you couldn't go to the Y, but as long as you were part of the school and you came to swim, you could get in. And of course, when I came through, I came through in the 50s when I graduated from high school. And we had a wonderful football team. We had a wonderful basketball team. We had a lot of social things around their winnings, traveled, you know, when they were playing, and just really enjoyed it because, unfortunately, I say unfortunately because at that time, we had a coach, and all of the players, oftentimes, were African-American on the floor. That was sort of unheard of. And one of the mothers really got very upset about that. And the coach at that time was sent to the elementary school. And we know why that took place, because he didn't see race. He saw students who could do a job, and he saw people who could get state championships, and that's what we did. And so I always felt so bad that he kind of paid a penalty for that kind of narrow-mindedness, as opposed to just saying, this is the best people on the floor, and this is the team that will get the job done.
These are the students that actually have the skills.
Right.
To win the help win the games and like you said, go to a state championship.
Right.
And that was going to be my questions when you said a lot of the activities was built around the teams. I was going to say there must have been, they had to be a winners.
They were winners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
So when you say activities around them, those games, what kinds of activities you
Well, like? After the games, you know, we would celebrate or we would go and have dances. And I will say there was no segregation at that in our classes. The Caucasian students, they were happy that we were winning. And so they came to all the events and danced and had a good time. And so there was never that feeling at the school level of segregation or this shouldn't be happening, because I think they all welcomed the fact that we did so well as a school and had such wonderful recognition as winners.
I was going to say, everybody likes to be part of
right.
winners. Were there any changes in your family life during your school years?
No. You know, I being in Ann Arbor, and of course, you know the Dunbar Community Center, I always lived around that center. And I participated in everything that they offered, the clubs. I did sing with every group they had. We had a trio, we had sextets, we had choirs. And so that opened a lot of doors, because they would ask, people in the community would ask us to sing different places. And so consequently, we had a lot of exposure to different, like Republican dinners or Democratic dinners, or people that wanted us to come to perform at certain lofty occasions. So I was very grateful for being able to sing and to be a part of that, because it just opened the door to a lot of things, and you were exposed to a lot of wonderful things that you might not have had an opportunity to see or to even be a part of.
I can remember when we had our focus on the arts and it was music.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to get you to sing at that event. You came, but you didn't sing.
Not that time.
So tell me a little bit more about the Dunbar Center in terms of who actually came there. Was it primarily African Americans?
Yes, it was primarily African Americans. They had a lot of Caucasian backers, but the people who came and attended, like I know, they had an adult bridge class, and we had dances also at the center. I have pictures of some of the pictures that of the kids, teenagers dancing there. And then we had a lot of little girls' clubs and that you could be a part of. We sewed, we had a little dance. One of the directors that came had taught us how to do interpretive dancing. So we did that. And so, you know, again, a lot of exposure that you would not ordinarily get unless you were really a part of that kind of situation.
And why don't you tell us again where the Dunbar Center was located?
It was located on 4th Avenue in Kingsley. And it was just a home away from home.
And so was it after school only or on the weekends or exactly?
Pretty much after school.
After school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When thinking back on your school years, what important social or historical events were taking place at the time, and how did they personally affect you and your family?
As I think back, as I said, I came through the 50s, and of course there was becoming an awareness. There was the Korean War. The Second World War, of course, had ended, and the realization that some things needed to change for African Americans. And so I came through that era where you knew that you were as good as anybody else. My parents always told me that. So I never felt I had to take a back seat to anything, and you or to anybody. You just were who you were, and you saw people for people. And I think a lot of times I felt, as long as I felt that way and showed people that I felt I was good, that's how they that's how they treated me. And I know when I was in high school, I was the only African American in my class. They made me the president of the class, that homeroom. They made me the student body representative. And so consequently, I don't know why that happened, but I never felt like they excluded me from anything because they always elected me to go to represent them.
They probably saw the skills that you had. So it was you, Audrey.
And while I was in high school, I did sing. I sang with one of the bands in high school. And so then I got a lot of exposure and some of the traditions of going out to play with this band that I sang with in high school was also fun.
Well, was that like a small band? Or
no, well.
And you were the lead singer? Or
yes,
what was that?
I was the only singer.
The only singer. Okay.
We did a lot of She Wore Blue Velvet.
Know that song. You have lived during the era of segregation. Can you speak about that?
Yes.
What was your school segregated? You kind of answered that, but you can always go back over things
again. Well, I just think that, it was what it was. I can remember the only time that I thought something was kind of unrealistic, I was in gym class, and I had my shoes off, and I had worn sandals in the sun. And this person looked at me, and she said, "You're tanned." And I laughed because I thought, yes, we tan. If we stay in the sun, we do tan. So
that's true.
I was just, but it was something she thought, because we were already brown, that we wouldn't tan in the sun or get darker, or there would be that different highlights in because your feet had been in the sun. So other than that, segregation was what it was. I can remember my mother going to the 10-cent store, Kresge's, up on campus. And I remember she came home. My mother was just a beautiful, sweet person. Never complained about anything. But she said, "I was very upset today because I went to that counter and that girl walked all around me. She knew I was there to be served, but she acted like I didn't exist." And you didn't run into that a lot, because, there were places we just didn't go
to,
because you knew you weren't welcome. And you knew sometimes that if you went in a place to get ice cream, you didn't stay. Sit down at the table, you got yours, and you left. That, I know when we would go back to Connersville for the summers, we'd get out of church and we'd go down to this place and we'd always buy a Coke. But you never ate inside. You always had to get out and go back to the stand in front of the church or stand outside in order to drink whatever you had purchased or that kind of thing. So those are the segregated kinds of things that I remember. But I also remember when things began to change in the 60s, the civil rights movement. And it was kind of interesting because I worked with an older lady, and she didn't understand why they were putting up all that fuss. why don't they just leave things alone? You know, why are they sitting at counters? Why are they stirring up a ruckus? And it was hard for me to understand why she felt that it shouldn't be done. It's like you're just saying that we should just have the status quo. But I know she came from that school where she just didn't want the confusion. And so I understood that, but it was still kind of an interesting conversation that we would have.
So you say you work with the lady, and I'm assuming she was Caucasian?
No. She was African American.
And she didn't understand?
She didn't understand. She didn't want to. I think she came from that era where you just don't make waves.
Stay in your place?
Stay in your place. Don't make waves. And if you do stay in your place, they'll just leave you alone. But they don't. You know, that wasn't.
Right.
That wasn't something that happened to everybody. She was just a quiet person who just kind of stayed under the radar. She came to work, she went home.
And that was it.
And that was it.
Okay. So as we're talking, I want to talk about, I know several times we've done interviews, they talked about the Black Business District
mm-hmm.
and the areas where those businesses were located. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, of course, there was the Friendly Corner up on 4th Avenue. It was owned by Jewish people. And a lot of people accused them of being communists, that they were part of the Communist Party. They couldn't just be people mm-hmm. because they were in a Black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So they had to be communists. And, of course, I was not allowed to go up on Ann Street. But I knew Ann Street. And, of course, that's where people got their hair done on 4th Avenue. The barber shops were up there. The beer garden was there. The pool hall was there, where you could get your shoes shined was there. And so Ann Street was the Black business district, as far as I knew. That's what I grew up with, even though sometimes I could not go up there, you know, as a child. But I was blessed because two of my girlfriends lived on that block because their uncle owned a pool hall. And so they lived above in an apartment upstairs on Ann Street. And it was like stepping into some strange place. That apartment was absolutely gorgeous. They had a grand piano. They had beautiful furnishings. They had a formal dining room, a beautiful kitchen. And I remember I went there for dinner, and the gentleman of the house had all the plates in front of him, served the plates and passed them down. I thought, oh my goodness, that was nothing I had ever been exposed to.
And you weren't expecting
and
that.
And I wasn't expecting that. And so that was kind of strange, but a wonderful experience.
Okay. Now, so that was the Black Business District. And I know that we interviewed one individual and they talked about how a lot of the homes there, like we know that Mrs. Celia was one of the few that were still in that area.
Right.
So that whole area over by Zingerman's, all back in there, there were Blacks living there?
Oh, well, not some on Detroit Street.
Some on Detroit Street,
yes.
Okay.
But, you know, when we'd go into Dyross, you know, that's what the store was. He always watched it because they always felt if Black kids came in, they came to steal. And so they would stand at the door and guard you sort of till you left the store. But he also recognized that because he was in an African-American neighborhood, that's where people came to get their greens. I have a friend now who moved here as a student. He said, the only place I could go buy me some greens was at that Dyross store.
Okay.
Because, you know, they didn't have them in Kroger stores or the A&P. Because they didn't cater to African-American, quote, food
right.
at that time. So, and the neighborhood was just what it was. I just remember the friendships that we had and the girls. We had slumber parties and stayed overnight at each other's house and just had a good time.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on to part three. It's adulthood, marriage, and family life. This set of questions covers a fairly long period of your life, from the time you completed your education, entered the labor force, or started a family, until all of your children left home and you and/or your spouse retired. So we might be talking about a stretch of time spanning as much as 4 decades.
Okay.
All right. After you finished high school, where did you live?
I live still at home, and because I was kind of free to do things, I was looking for a job since I didn't go to college and I had decided I was going to help my brother, so I needed to get a job. So I worked a few jobs from the time I got. I had worked the summer at St. Joseph Hospital. I worked there every summer in the kitchen. And they asked me if I wanted to stay on at St. Joe, and I said, oh no, I'm going to school. And then, of course, after I got out, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm not going to school, so what are you going to do? And I did not want to go to the university because they worked on Sunday. And I was very active in my church. I was one of the church soloists, and so I said, I don't want to go to the university hospital. But I took a temporary job at the post office. And I did go up to the university, and they called my house. And they talked to my mother because she said, we want to offer her a job. And I thought, oh my goodness. And my mother said, well, she's not here. And I told my mother, I said, you tell them when they call back that I took a job at the post office. And because I made that commitment, I will not be leaving them. So if they have to give the job to somebody else, fine. And the lady who had interviewed me thought that was the most wonderful thing, that I would be committed and to keep what I had promised to do, and they kept the job for me.
That was wonderful.
They kept the job for me. I worked in a new outpatient building. They had just opened an outpatient building, and the job was Monday through Friday. I didn't have to work weekends.
So you were able to do
yes
on Sundays,
right,
you're singing and
right.
Everything else.
I said, I can't believe that this happened, but I also know, you know, when you ask for things, sometimes they are given to you, and that was a blessing.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
And she realized you were a person with integrity, so.
I think that's what she was thinking, that
right.
I was a lady, a woman of, a girl of integrity, mm-hmm. that if I had made a commitment, that I would follow through with it.
Right. Let's see here.
And of course, I stayed there for 47 years.
Oh, long time. Okay. You sort of just answered that, because the next thing was going to be, did you remain there, or did you move around through your adult life, and what was the reason for these moves?
Well, I did move within the university system.
All right, tell me about that.
Because I started there as an elevator operator. We helped move the furniture into that outpatient building, and I stayed there for in that capacity. And then they had an opening in the operating room, and they were going to train people to become surgical technicians. They called them operating room technicians. And so I went and took that training. And I worked as a surgical tech for 3 years in the operating room. And I loved it. It was just a wonderful experience. I just met so many, you know, lovely people and learned a lot of skills. In fact, I was just thinking about that, because I went to a party and I met one of the doctors who followed one of the doctors that I worked with in the operating room. And I said, oh, I remember working especially doing open heart surgery. We had just started learning how to go in to do ASDs and VSDs, little openings in the hearts that they could close.
When you say we had just learned, you mean you were doing that?
Well, I was the surgical
person
who passed
okay.
the instruments to the doctor.
Okay.
That's what I learned to do.
Which is a great skill.
It was a wonderful skill. And I'd still like to be doing it, but it just didn't work out
And you did it for 3 years.
And of course, I was very blessed because the teacher that we had prepared us in a wonderful way to be ready for anything. And because we were trained, they allowed us to do a number of things that they didn't allow other people to do, like do counts of the sponges after surgery was over. And I know that I worked with Dr. Feller in the operating room as a burn unit person. I'd scrub, get everything out, scrub in, and help him debride. You know, I would be the only assistant that he had, and then unscrub and clean up. So he was sort of a one-man band. But all the experiences that I had were very lovely because I just thought that it was a great thing to do.
It just sounds like it. Mm-hmm. So you stayed for 3 years and they cut that out, or what happened?
No. I got pregnant, and my husband worked afternoons, and I worked days, and I didn't want them to ask to take call, because so many people will say, well, I can't take call, and that puts a burden on everybody else.
Yes, yes.
And I just thought, I don't want to be a burden to that. So I decided I would go to see the human resource director, the personnel director at that time, and say to him, I would like a job doing something else. And he gave me an option of coming in to interview with somebody. And the job that I was able to get was a reception in personnel, working for that same woman who kept that job for
me. Open for you?
Yes. I was her receptionist for 3 whole months.
And only 3 months?
3 months, because the guy that interviewed me had an opening, and he asked me to come and work for him. And I thought, I can't do that. I just came to work for her. And so I talked to the human resource director, and he said, Audrey, when opportunities are open for you, because you don't know that they'll ever come again, you need to take them when they're offered. So I did.
You know, and that speaks volumes for you in terms of you're able to make career changes, but you stayed within the hospital, mm-hmm. but you're able to make career changes right
yes,
there.
Yes.
So if you had not had the work ethics, et cetera, you probably would not have had those opportunities.
Well, I know that I was very, very blessed, and I always tried to do a good job because that's the way I was raised. If you're going to do a job, you had to give the best job that you were capable of giving. And the guy I went to work for got a promotion and asked me to come and work with him in another job that he got. So I got a promotion out of that. And the supervisor got sick and they asked me if I would take her place while she was ill. And I said, I don't know her job. And then I thought to myself, this is an experience.
You can learn.
That you can learn.
Right.
So I had to ask the employees to tell me what they did so I could tell them what to do.
I love it.
And then after that guy who hired me into HR left, another lovely gentleman came who became our director. And one day he came in the office and he said to me, Audrey, we don't know what will come up, but we do know that we would like to place you in a professional job in this department at some time. And I said, thank you. And they sort of made a job, and that's how I became a professional in HR.
In HR.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Really interesting listening to you talk about that. Okay, so we're going to move on to ask you to tell us a little bit about your married and or family life.
Well, I did marry a gentleman who was from West Virginia, and he worked at the hospital at the time we met. And after we married at home, and he decided that he would go into the plant. So he went to the Rawsonville Ford plant and worked. And so we were married 30 years. And we have two beautiful children. I have a son named Kevin, who presently is works for the police department at the university. He's a detective who handles computer crimes at this point in time.
And we need him.
Yes. And then my daughter also worked for the university, but one of the pastors at our church asked if she would leave the university and come to work at Second Baptist. And I will just say this, I thought, you're nuts. But she said she thought that the Lord had a work for her to do. And so she came down there, so she's the administrative manager at the Second Baptist Church, so, and does an excellent job. So I feel very blessed that I have committed children who also believe in doing an excellent job and taking care of business. It was really funny. I always have laughed at this because in my job that I ended up finally, I hired a number of people into the university. And my children never asked me to get them a job. A lot of people call me on the phone and say, can you get my daughter a job? Can you get my son a job? They never said, Mom, would you help me get a job? They got their own jobs. And I was so proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. So you gave them a great foundation.
Oh, I tried. Yeah, I tried. Yeah. And I just enjoy. Whenever I'm in their presence, I'm very happy.
So how are things going for her in that position? Is she, well,
wonderful. She's sort of like a one-armed paper hanger because she just kind of has to do everything. I said, well, you know, when they say that you're the administrative manager, that means you have to manage everything. If you drop something on the floor, you got to clean it up. If the custodian's off, trustees can't get in, she's in there cleaning. So, but that's her. Both of them went in the service, and so consequently, they have Army background. So they know how to take care of business. So,
oh, that's wonderful. Now, I want to back up just for a second while we're talking about work. I want to go back for a second and ask you about your father in the bomber plant.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked about your mom, but tell me a little bit about that because I wanted to go back to that.
Well, he worked at the bomber plant, but he didn't work on the line. He had worked for a doctor in Connersville prior to us coming up to Michigan. We came in September of 41, and World War II started when the Pearl Harbor was bombed on the 7th of December, because I can remember as a little girl looking out the window and a young guy was going by saying, extra, extra, read all about it. Japs bomb Pearl Harbor. And that, of course, was kind of a different time for us, too, because that was the beginning of rationing. It was the beginning of everybody really feeling that they had to be patriotic and do the right thing, which, of course, we did. And, of course, that's when they started the bomber plant. And of course, the women that got into the plants. But my dad worked, because he had worked for a doctor in Connersville, he was in the medical part of the factory and helped with that kind of thing. And then, of course, after the war was over, he started working for with a guy who cleaned carpets. And that's what he did a lot. He did that for years. They would go out and clean carpets and lay carpets, and because this guy was from our hometown, and so he sort of helped him with his business.
So they were kind of out there before Stanley Steamer was.
Right. That's exactly right.
So you told me about your children. And so what was life like when they were young and living in the house?
Wonderful. We just had fun. And of course, because my mother and dad were still living, they got a chance to spend time with their grandparents. I was also blessed that my husband had a wonderful family. And so I married into a wonderful family. My mother-in-law was second to none. She just was the kind of person who just loved you. She didn't interfere. She didn't try to run your business. She just loved you, and she let you know that.
So that was a blessing to have a mother-in-law like
yes.
that.
Yes. And my children, they would go and sometimes spend a couple of weeks in the summer with her because they lived in a place called Boomer, West Virginia. And they lived in a holler. I never knew about hollers and mountains. And
we'll talk about that because that's new to me.
Well, they live where you go up into the mountain, and then you go into these roads, and the houses would be sparsely situated. Sometimes you'd have like a mansion on the hill, and then next door, there'd be somebody with a wash machine on the porch. And they would call hollers. And I just learned about that as I went to visit West Virginia. So we would go down there at least once a year. And of course, my mother, all the time when I was small, we would always go back to my hometown every summer. Every summer the Lord made, we went to Connersville. So I never forgot any of my relatives there because I just spent a lot of time with them every summer. So that was a blessing.
So you took your children also?
And yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so they very family oriented because that's the way I was. And then, of course, because I began to know people at the university because of the job that I had, they didn't like to go places with me because they said I knew too many people.
You couldn't get from point A to point B, right?
Mom, you had to talk to too many people. You had to talk to too many people. So sometimes they would kind of drag behind if we were out someplace.
Okay. So what were some of your personal favorite things to do for fun?
Oh, I really did enjoy singing. And I sang with the University Choral Union. I sang with a jazz group with Willis Patterson and Carol McFadden. And we would sing at some dance venues. And as I said, singing opened a lot of doors. I sang for Governor G. Menin Williams at his inauguration. And then I sang at a Republican dinner, and they said, and guess where she sang the last time? For the Democrats. I just thought, my singing is bipartisan.
You might have to end this interview with a song. Are there any special days, events, or family traditions you practice that differ from your childhood traditions?
No, we were pretty much still the same tradition. We always really did believe in celebrating birthdays, individual birthdays, and singing. We always added on to the birthday song, "We hope you live to be 100." My brother on my birthday still calls me up to sing that to me.
Does he?
Yes.
You had a church member that you shared at the event that just turned 100.
Right,
so,
right,
well,
right.
On Sunday you shared
right.
that. Okay, we're going to move into work and retirement, and probably some of this you've already shared, but we'll take a look and see here. Once again, it's a fairly long period of your life, from the time you entered the labor force and started a family up until the present time.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about your
Well, I will tell you
okay,
a little
ahead.
More about my work experience
right,
because after they found a professional job that I went into, it happened to be one where they had started to post jobs, so internal jobs, so that people could transfer or get promotions. And it just so happens that the union, AsME Union, came into being while I was in that role, and it was about promotions and transfers as part of the contract. And so consequently, I really learned how to deal with unions from the beginning at the university because that was all new. And so that was quite a wonderful experience. I handled the AsME service and maintenance union. I did the police union when it came into being. And also I handled the trades. And that was quite an experience because their old boy network.
I was just sitting there thinking.
When I went in there was alive and well. And I can remember when I also had sent a person for a job, a clerical job, in the outpatient building where I used to run the elevator. And a guy that I knew called me up on the telephone because I had sent him an African-American applicant. And he said to me, "Audrey, why did you send her? We already have one." And I said, "I sent her because she was qualified. And that's what I expect you to interview her, because she's qualified for the position." And then people say, "Now that Ms. Lucas is in that job, we got a lot of people in the record room that are African American." I said, "Just a minute. They're qualified people." I said, "You didn't say anything when they were all Caucasian, so don't say anything now if they all happen to be African Americans, as long as they're qualified to do the job." And I just knew that was just something that you had to say. True. Because otherwise, people would just do anything. But the thing that I loved about being in the service of Maintenance is we hired a lot of young people for the summer and for part-time jobs. At that time, the university had a lot of part-time jobs. And I got a chance to talk to young people and say to them, "I can send you on this job. I can't keep it for you." I said, "And so you're gonna have to come to work every day on time and do your job. This is the first job for you, so don't blow it. Because if you get fired, I can't save you." And I saw somebody recently, and they said, "Do you know Mrs. Lucas?" She said, "Yes, she got me a job at the university." I said, "Did I give you a lecture?" She said, "Yes."
A good lecture.
And she said, "I still remember it." She said, "I still remember what you told me." She said, "That's why I've done so well." And I thought, oh, good, somebody really listened.
You know, my aunt used to always say, "You plant the seed."
Yes.
And you never know where it's going to grow. So
yes.
Sometimes
yes,
it might be years later as you hear about it, but that's great. So how did your life change when you retired?
Well, for one thing, after I retired, I loved my job. I loved my department. I loved my boss. And she asked me to come back. So I did. And so I worked as a temporary a lot after I left. And somebody said, I thought you retired. We had a party for you.
You you got gifts.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they even had a mix-up. The Social Security listed me as a temporary employee after I'd worked there 47 years because I'd filled out temporary paperwork to work there for doing something special thing, to just come in and assist in any way that I could. But I thought that was funny. All of a sudden, I was just a temporary employee. But it was a wonderful work experience at the university. But after I left, you know, they had parties for me. They had a lot of wonderful things. And people kept saying, "Audrey, you know, it's 47 years. You could work till it's 50. And I said, "I don't want to work till it's 50. I'm ready to go," even though I did work temporary. But, of course, you know, I've always been involved in the community. And so I still, you know, I was very active in my church. And, of course, what happened is I retired in January 2000, and the pastor of my church, who was Reverend Emmett L. Green at the time, came to me and he said, "I know you have just retired, Mrs. Lucas," but he said, "I'm planning on leaving and stepping down in October. And if you don't mind, I would like very much if you would come on board and take over the administrative duties for the church. And I said, okay. And I'm thinking this will be for a few months. And so he left in October. And by that time, I started working again in April.
October, what year was that again?
The year I retired, 2000.
All right.
I had 4 months off from January to April. And then I started going to train under him for the things that I would need to know after he left in October. And then we got a new pastor that next year in 2001, who was a very young, lovely man who did not want to do administrative work. So he asked me if I would stay on. So I stayed in that role for 5 years. And I'm still the church clerk, but people still think I'm sometimes the administrator, but my daughter is administrator now.
Passed it on to her.
Yes.
So you officially retired now?
I officially retired. In fact, I have an office still and a phone. And I keep saying, I got to tell people I'm not here every day. Because, you know, I was in there every day. And some people think I still am in there every day. But I wouldn't trade the experience. That was a different kind of experience also. And, of course, I still sing with different groups. And at that time, I did. And I'm not singing at this time because I just figure when you get older, your voice changes.
So I can't ask you to come and sing for an event then.
No. I'd have to really warm it up for about 6 months in order to do that.
Yeah.
Even though I still love to sing.
Well, some of the experiences you had singing, they sound like you had some great opportunities there as well.
I did. I really did.
Okay. All right, so we're moving into the last part. It's historical and social events. Tell me how it has been for you to live in this community. You sort of talked about, you know, here and there, but anything else you want to add?
I think Ann Arbor, we know, had its flaws. When you know that the students couldn't live in, African-American students couldn't live in housing on campus, and that's why a number of places, you know, kept rooms for those students. I think I was very grateful as those times began to change. I remember a young lady that I met who was in nursing school, and she was one of the first African Americans that stayed in the nursing dorm across the street from the hospital. And so it's been kind of a wonderful adventure to see Ann Arbor grow and to change, because a lot of times people don't want to acknowledge that they were racist at some time. And but, you know, that was just a fact, and we had to deal with it. I admired Reverend Carpenter when he stopped, and when they were trying to realign the districts and saying to African Americans, you know, we're gonna put a highway through here, but they were not saying where you could go to live or what was gonna happen to the housing as they tore it down for the highway. And, of course, that didn't happen.
And what area was that?
Beek Street.
Beek Street, all right.
Beek Street. It was supposed to be connecting 23 with 94. And, of course, you know, they did something different. But it's been, from a historical standpoint, it has been wonderful to watch Ann Arbor grow into the kind of community that it needed to be. And you're still, you know, you're going to still have people.
Right.
Who are going to try to stop your opportunities. But fortunately, me as an individual, I only ran into people who wanted to say, how can we give you a hand up? And so I really feel very blessed from a historical standpoint of being able to project myself in a way that people wanted to do that for me. So
you mentioned that students that came here couldn't stay in the dorms. And I know I've heard other people interviewed talked about when family members came or they traveled, you had to stay in homes.
Right, right.
So in terms of the African-American community, in terms of people staying in homes, were there always enough places to find for those students?
Yes, because they had the Britt house, and I know the Jeffries house. They just bought the house to rent it to students. And so, you know, they didn't have an overabundance of African American students at that time, but of course it began to grow. And I think that's when they began to recognize that they were going to have to let them go into the dorms like any other student, because towards the end of the 50s, even before the Civil Rights Movement, I think the university began to recognize that they were going to have to have housing for African American students that were coming here.
So tell me the location of the Britt House.
The Britt House was up near Glenn. You know where Glenn and Glenn and Catherine Street. It was in that area.
In that area.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay. Before the hospital took over all those houses.
So that area was populated with mainly African Americans in that area as well.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the Britt House, the woman who ran that house, was Herbert Ellis's sister.
Okay.
And she had it for girls that were here in school at the university.
Okay. That's an interesting story that could really be explored a little bit more as
yes,
well.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. What would you say has changed the most from the time you were a young person to now?
I look at the city of Ann Arbor, and I look at its growth. I don't necessarily think that we should continue to grow like Topsy with all these high rises, but that's a personal opinion.
Okay.
I am kind of disappointed with the way they hire people, and that's because I'm old school. I just believe that if you're going to be a personnel office, you ought to do things personally. And if you're going to be a human resource, you ought to treat people
as human beings.
They're more than a piece of paper. They're more than a computer. They're more than just somebody's Social Security number. I think I'm sorry that that has been lost. And I understand that that is what has happened, because my boss and I, we ran around to a number of different employment agencies to see how they were doing things, and they had already stopped interviewing. They had already stopped following up, you know, and we got nervous about doing references, because, you know, if you said the wrong thing, people would sue you. We began to get nervous about how we did everything. But I think some change is for the better. But it is what it is, and so people adapt and they adjust. And of course, you know, we live now where everything is Facebook and Twitter and all those kinds of things. And I can remember when we had to go and take lessons on the computer because everybody was getting a computer. My partner, he and I are still friends today. I still laugh about him, because as soon as he would do something, he was jump. And he would hit the button, and we'd lose all of our information. So we spent a lot of time laughing at our new responsibilities on the computer.
So he wasn't hitting the save button.
No.
Okay, when thinking back over your entire life, what are you most proud of?
I think I'm mainly proud, first of all, of my work in the church. Because I really think that we were blessed to have the Reverend Carpenters of the world, the Reverend Greens, the Reverend Woods in
Love
the community.
Reverend Woods.
Yes, you know, he always called me his Second Baptist Church member. And Reverend Lightfoot, when he came, these are wonderful people that came to our community, and we have been able to blossom and excel. And I'm very proud of our church communities. I'm very proud of my work that I did at the university, because, you know, a lot of times people say everyone has a purpose. And I just felt that I was so blessed to find out what my purpose was. My purpose was to be at that university and to plant those seeds for young people and for people who came in there to be as good as they could, to blossom, and to make themselves worthy of everything that they did. And you know, it comes back. I'm just going to tell you this. I had cancer, and I went to radiology. And the lady came out. She said, "Ms. Lucas, do you remember me?" And I said, "Your face looks familiar," because they all look familiar.
That's what I say to them. That's my standard line.
And she said, "You hired me into the university years ago." And she said, "I am the supervisor in this department. We'll take care of you." That was a blessing. It's really like the things that you push out, they come back. They really do come back. And I have sense enough to be grateful
for that,
for all of that. Yes.
So how are you doing health-wise now?
Wonderful.
Great. Great.
Just wonderful. They took excellent care of me, and so I have been blessed.
Okay. That's wonderful. What advice would you give to the younger generation?
I think the things that I said to them years ago, that you need to always put your best foot forward. You want to be an original. You want to be authentic. You want to always do the best that you can and not accept anything else that is less than that.
That's really good advice. Mm-hmm. So the final question is, how do you personally feel about doing this interview and its impact? What impact has it had on you?
I am so honored to have been chosen and for you all to ask me to do this. First of all, I just believe in what you do. First of all, I have to say that. And I think it is so important, because even though people are from this community, what they bring to the table is different. How they can inspire people or try to tell a story is all different, and it is all necessary. And it's all wonderful, and I'm glad that you're doing it.
Well, thank you.